From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk more about pet peeves. It's part two of our Pet Peeve-a-palooza, and it feels like we're just getting started. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hi, Kathy. Hi, Ross. We're going to jump back into our pet peeve extravaganza that we started last week, except that breaking news, I don't know, we got a letter that was interesting that we wanted to talk about first. So let's do that.
So we're breaking from pet peeve lupa. Palooza,
yeah,
whatever.
I don't know.
Stomach Abby. Palooza. Ed writes us with a non-pet peeve, but it was a question related to our discussion of passive voice a couple of weeks ago. Weren't we talking about a couple of weeks ago? Anyway, and it intrigued us, especially because we love the film. He said, I was watching an old film, Lever to Heaven, USA 1945, Gene Tierney. And I noticed two times when the passive was used, whereas we wouldn't use it now. One character said, after I was graduated from university, and later another said, Danny was drowned last year. Does the first one imply that it's the university that graduates a person, not the person himself, as in I graduated? But that doesn't work for the second one. It would imply that someone drowned Danny. Well, she kind of did, actually. But anyway.
That's what I always thought. I almost, when we got the letter, I almost wrote back and said, she sort of did. I agree with you, Kathy.
She
made him die. Yeah,
she was in the boat. She had the oar. Come on. Anyway, when did this pattern change to active voice? I don't think anyone today would use this construction. Ed. Thank you, Ed, for letting us talk about the film, too.
One thing that really hits me, not to be technical here, but it's kind of passive, but it's really transitive intransitive. We've talked about that before. Transitive verbs are, I think I was criticized for saying, you know, he hit someone, because I was always like, why are you talking about hit? But he hit Fletcher. Hit is a transitive verb. Fletcher slept is intransitive. The sleeping, you know, he's not doing anything. The sleeping is just happening. And in The Graduated, it looks like it's passive, but it's actually really technically transitive, intransitive, is the first thing I want to say. When I was graduated, the graduated, if you look it up in the OED, can be used like that. And it was used a long time ago, but it no longer is. And the same with drowned. They both were used in an intransitive sense, but now they're pretty much transitive. In other words,
so it's kind of something more specific to those words rather than being a passive construction.
Mm-hmm. He was drowned doesn't mean that someone drowned him.
Well, right. Could it, depending on the rest
of
the sentence.
But in the intransitive sense, I'm saying you're right. But in that sense, he was drowned basically just means he drowned.
Yeah, it's an intransitive verb, no object, but there's still the drowning happening.
Catherine, you couldn't have put it better, and I think you could go with little Danny on his little boat and explain grammatically why you're not doing anything to him.
Although, interestingly enough, I have seen both of those phrases, or both of those was graduated and was drowned. It occurs to me, I have seen them in books and stuff. I'm sure they're older books that I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
But they do not look that odd to me, interestingly enough. I mean, I was graduated seems like something I've run across, and I have a feeling I've seen it in British stuff, but I could be wrong.
I think I had the same thought you did. I was thinking in British stuff, I think I've seen it, actually.
Yeah.
And there is one use that we found of drowned that in an intransitive sense that actually today we could all use and instantly understand. He was drowned when trying to save Danny.
Yeah, you'd understand that nobody did that to him.
Yeah, I think that would work to me.
But somehow it's a step removed. He was drowned.
Yes.
It's like it's a descriptive as opposed to like an active, I guess, for me.
Yeah, in that sense, it becomes passive, really.
Yeah, I guess so. With that sentence, obviously, we have the extra information that tips us off that it was a dangerous situation and there wasn't somebody just holding his head under the water. But if I just read I mean, these days, if I read he was drowned in the lake, I would absolutely assume somebody did it to him.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Such as Gene Tierney.
For example.
Although I have a real confession to make. That Danny was really annoying. I mean,
I felt the same way. I mean, I don't think he should have drowned, but, you know, honestly, I was like kind of on her side because he was always like, look at me, look what I'm doing. You're like, you know what?
The show was really fun, but it was really silly too with the, did you love her in the summer? Did you love her in the winter?
Book,
with
the book is good too. I have one more question while we're on this. I'm sorry. This is not about transitive, intransitive. That was graduated from university. What about, some people say I graduated without the from. Some people say graduated college. Have you heard that? Or graduated
university? I graduated college?
Yeah.
Sure. I've heard that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. No, I was thinking you don't always say from. And going back to the was, I mean, the was is definitely just the older construction, but I'm still wondering if it's British too. I was graduated.
We should do some research on that. I agree with you, Kathy. I think it's, my feeling is it's British. Now it's used as British. Now.
Next peeve.
Go, Kath.
This is actually the beginning of a pet peeve-o-rama.
I wanted you to say that. I knew you were going to say it. Great. Okay.
Okay.
It started with Monica. Okay, Monica wrote, I have many grammar pet peeves, as I suspect most of your listeners do. Boy, do they. But what bothers me the most these days is a recent development in my observation of the misuse, overuse of the phrases kind of and sort of. My concern is the potential negative social impact of this phrase. Worse yet, I've even caught myself misusing these phrases lately. I also heard one of your episodes several weeks ago where I believe all three of you fell into this trap. I know I did too. More than once. Here's my concern. Many people, and especially journalists, Fletcher, are now using kind of, sort of, to soften a truth, hence weakening the assertion of the speaker. This misuse serves to decrease the credibility of the press, researchers, etc., when we desperately need credibility. Individuals of the sort who want to make a case dilute their meaning and lose credibility when misusing these words. I believe that kind of, sort of, is very appropriate when we mean not quite half-hearted. For example, he kind of shuffled the papers is an appropriate use when meaning barely or not thoroughly. However, it's an absolute misuse when we say she kind of went to the meeting. In this instance, we have not fully owned the truth that she went to the meeting, period. We also got another one. Actually, we've got a couple. This was a popular thing from Jim, who wrote to us, and he said, we've talked about fillers, with Ross especially taking the stand. he got Ross on the like, sort of, and kind of.
But adding, along with most experts, thank you, go on.
That he says that people say that they're placeholders like or. He says, much like Monica, I want to promote the concept that the filler hypothesis is wrong, and therefore, we have very passionate listeners.
We do. It's
all
good.
All of the deductions that follow are also wrong. Please note that I said the hypothesis, not your hypothesis. So then he asked us to listen to a podcast. And he said, she says it was a kind of beautiful room.
Mm-hmm.
Said, did she really think the room was only kind of beautiful? No.
I think this is a misunderstanding of what that phrase kind of means in this context.
I think there are two uses, and I think there is one use which Monica basically started to do where I think it does dilute meaning, you know, it definitely. But for example, we found sentences like he's sort of very buff. Now, what does that mean?
That would mean, well, he could be very buff in particular ways. He's sort of very buff.
Or he's very sort of buff, too.
He's very sort of buff. I mean, like, what word am I looking for here? Buff. He's very sort of buff. Do you see how, I mean, in this case, it kind of is a filler in that specific case.
I think so. And then in the gym, Jim had us listen to a really interesting podcast on bird watching and stuff. And I listened to a few others. And one of them, I think the person was asked, maybe it wasn't his, I think it was Shell Collecting podcast I also went into, but like said, you know, when did you get interested in conchology, the study of shells? I think it was that. And he said, you know, I was sort of very taken from the first day I went to the beach in wherever. Mm-hmm. And again, I was sort of very taken I think in both cases, they're not diminishing the taken at all.
No.
I think they mean...
Also, I want to back up. I said it's kind of a filler earlier. So I am also doing that. In fact, people who are bothered by this will yell, I'm sure, at their speakers every time I open my mouth, because I do this sort of thing all the time.
I do too.
But... a thing along these lines, right? This sort of thing. But when he said I was sort of very taken, he's saying I was very taken in a way. There is a way in which I was very taken. That sort of is serving a purpose. It's saying there, you know, in a way. This room is sort of very beautiful. It doesn't mean you look at it and you think, beautiful. It means in a way, in a particular way, this room is very beautiful. Maybe there are subtle quirks. There's something going on there in a way. Sort of does serve a purpose. Absolutely, in that sentence.
The only thing I see what you're saying. I think that I was thinking of another word in England that's used quite a bit. I mean, we use it here too, quite a bit. The word is quite.
Mm-hmm. I use quite a lot.
I do too, and quite, and I think there is a sort of, the one thing about, so I'm just about to say it, sort of again.
It's fine, do it.
There is a,
throw them out
there. There is a type of slight self-deprecation that the Brits have quite a bit of, and I think sort of to some degree fulfills that role as well. Like, and then quite in that sense can mean two completely different things. The two situations are quite different. I don't quite know what to say. I don't quite know what to say there means not quite. And then the other one, it means completely.
I think also, though, apropos of that, or sort of apropos of that, I find a lot of times I use kind of or sort of as a real filler in terms of a thought process moment.
And use sort of, just hold up, stop 1 second. You just use sort of a sentence before.
Sort of apropos.
And in that sort of was interesting, though. I'm trying to interrupt you, Kathy, but in that sort of, of appropriate, you were basically, there you were hedging it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You weren't sure it was appropriate, or you weren't sure it was completely appropriate, sort of a la what Fletcher was just saying.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
It's interesting. Go on, though.
No, there are distinct moments for them. And I think sometimes they are mere fillers. I think other times they are softeners. I think other times they are like what Fletcher was talking about. Because I think I use it when I'm thinking of it right now, as I'm in the middle of thinking of it, and I'm trying to find the right words, and I'm kind of not right, you know, like some kind of buff. Buff might not be the word I wanted, but right now I'm going to use that, because I want to finish my sentence.
Yes, yes, exactly. What I do think is weird is the sentence that Monica gave us, which I don't hear people say. It was something along the lines of, she kind of went to the meeting. I don't hear that sort of thing. And I don't know if that is actually something Monica heard or just a sentence that Monica came up with to illustrate the point. But that is something that's a very direct, you know, that can easily be checked one way or the other. There aren't really gradients of truth with that. Right. She either went to the meeting or she didn't. I don't hear that. And I'm not telling Monica that she's wrong at all. But that is not something that I hear. These other examples of sort of, kind of, as softeners or as showing grades of something or as filler, those I hear all the time and those I use all the time. Absolutely.
Question, Fletcher. This is from the state, Columbia, South Carolina. Someone sent this in to us, a newspaper. The mayor, this is a quote from the article. The mayor used to always kind of say.
Well, maybe this is not a direct quote. Whatever the mayor is going.
That to me, that's what I read it like.
Right?
Yeah, he was alluding to something. He used to always kind of say that dogs were not as good as cats.
I mean, I don't have a direct quote, right?
Some linguist says this sort of is what he calls a deep precision device. The speaker is saying, don't think of this as being overly accurate, which I think you're saying. That's what you're saying.
Wait, maybe not necessarily a level of accuracy, or maybe it's not telling you not to think of this as accurate, but it's more like telling you that it is referring to a specific aspect rather than the entire thing. Again, we can talk about the room is kind of beautiful, right? It's beautiful in a kind of way.
Although I'm still going to hold, I still think, at least sometimes, I do think it's also used a la the British quite, where it serves as a sort of self-deprecating kind of, well, you know,
I'm quite happy.
And I
remember it's a signal of lack of precision to me also.
Yeah.
You're giving an impression of something, but you know, you can't really quote me because I don't know the specifics. However,
I agree with you. That's what we were talking about with the deposition device. Yeah. But I do think I'm going to go back to, like, we had a long time ago, we had an editor who was British, and he would throw in quites everywhere. And the quites had all sorts of different purposes and meanings. And I find myself, we were caught saying sort of and kind of. And I find myself using it as a sort of, in this case, I'm using sort of deliberately, but as a sort of, not deposition, but of a slightly, well, I'm kind of good at that, I might say. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of good at, doesn't mean I really don't think I'm good at it, but I'm going to, that seems boastful. So I'll say I'm kind of good.
That's a minimizing thing then.
I think I will use it that way. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder, do we use it, do any of us use it as a filler? Can we think of any examples?
Very little, except what Kathy was talking about earlier when you're searching for the right word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also, I think that it also does indicate that the word you're about to use is not necessarily the precise word that you wish you could find in your head right now. Mm-hmm. So it's not only filler. It is filler, but it's not only filler in that case.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, filler is much more the ums and the which, you yes. know, those, that's, mm-hmm. I mean, which I use, God,
sure.
so much. But, or like, I do, I'm a liker. I mean, I'm not going to deny it. But to me, the sort ofs and kind ofs are have a job when I use them.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually.
I think we've outlined here that there are a lot of different ways kind of and sort of can be used. And I personally think it's a misunderstanding to dismiss it as changing the meaning of your sentence. In fact, I think it's sometimes making your sentence closer to what you are trying to express. And again, a good part of this is I don't hear people say sort of and kind of, and maybe other people do, but I don't hear people say sort of and kind of when they're just stating something that is plainly factual. You wouldn't say
a la Monica's meeting.
You wouldn't say
sentence.
2 + 2 is kind of 5 or kind of 4. It's definitely not kind of 5.
And in that sense, you're right, Fletcher. I might say, Fletcher, I'm kind of mad at you today.
Yeah.
I'm kind of angry with you today.
Right,
and that's like a slightly minimizing.
Yes, yes.
It's a slightly, you know, politer way of saying I'm angry at you because you're offering you an out with the anger, I think, in a weird way.
Yeah. Not the same thing. Again, not the same thing, you know? He kind of went to the store to buy groceries. Well, I just don't hear people
that
say that.
I don't get.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I
don't understand.
Well, I don't hear
but
it.
But wasn't
right?
there, yeah. didn't Jim have an example of that? Wasn't that one of the Jim? No, she said kind of a beautiful room. No. I want to just throw in that this has been, for all of the people who wrote and thought this was a fairly new problem, no, this has been an issue for a long, long time, the whole idea of kind of, sort of. And I have Ambrose Bierce, who complained in 1909, I always loved Ambrose Bierce, that
too.
Kind of followed by an adjective, as in kind of good, is almost too gross for censure.
Ooh.
It's like, whoa, don't mince any words there, kind of Ambrose.
He never did.
No, he did not.
You know, there's nothing wrong with kind of good. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not an on-off switch. It's not either good or not good. I eat something and there's a strange taste to it, but I like it in a way. It's kind of good.
Yeah.
What? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, you're basically diminishing the good slightly, but you're still saying it's good. I agree.
I want to throw in a question for you guys because I did not see this. I saw something in one of the articles I was looking at that said, what is the difference between sort of and kind of? And it said, kind of implies a closeness and sort of implies distancing.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that's bull.
Do you think that this? That's ridiculous. Like, what the hell?
No, no, I'm sorry. Now we're getting like way too analytical on this one. Like... And I'm not going to say that's sort of dumb. I think it's dumb, that distinction.
Ambrose Bierce would like you right now.
Okay, our last pet peeve, or actually it's a trifecta pet peeve of the day.
Ooh.
Okay, I have three pet peeves, which are probably not very common. Number one, cavalry, cavalry.
Oh, yes.
I love this. I'm a Catholic priest and a Civil War nerd.
I want to say this was Tom from Indiana, just to...
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Fletcher.
And thank you, Tom. That's right.
Who is a Catholic priest and a Civil War nerd. So I listen to a lot of Civil War podcasts, and it's shocking to hear so many people who are deep into the Civil War mispronounce the word cavalry as cavalry. Cavalry comes from a Latin word for horse, caballus, and calvary comes from the Latin for skull, calvaria, and refers to the hill on which Christ was crucified, Golgotha, meaning the place of the skull, presumably because that's what the hill looked like. I've gotten so accustomed to talking at my phone and verbally correcting podcasters. I love this when they refer to Jeff Stewart's cavalry by saying cavalry out loud. That now when the word cavalry comes up in a scripture reading during Mass, my inner podcast critic wants to shout out, cavalry!
This is a really interesting one for me because I remember in Sunday school as a little kid, Amber, my Sunday school teacher, who had a real crush on.
Oh, you loved Amber.
I did. I still have her Bible she gave me. She said, Ross, always be a good boy. And I was like, I treasured it for years.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, Amber actually, I did that years ago. I had that mistake as a little kid. And I actually literally, you know, thought of like Christ on a horse or something. And that's an example, we've talked about this before, of metathesis, which is a common occurrence in all languages. It's when people switch around sounds, vowels or consonants in a word. And we've talked, I think we've said years ago, bird used to, in Old English, bird was brid. And then the I and the R switched. Horse used to be hross, and the sound switched over. It became, you know, horse. So it's not that uncommon. And this is a common example of a very common metathesis.
I loved one person I saw explained the easy confusion. They said probably because more people like know about the Bible than have fought on horseback recently.
That's interesting.
I had it the opposite way, I personally, but you know.
Do you have examples of personal metatheses? Because I have a bunch. I used to do. I did aminal versus animal.
Oh.
As a little kid.
Yeah.
If I have any, I know I do them as an adult, frankly. You know me, Ross. I'm prone to problematic pronunciation and alliteration. Sorry.
Very good, Kat. I do with prerogative.
I think a lot of people do with that one.
I say prerogative. A lot of times.
I think everybody says prerogative.
That's everybody's metathesis. Then.
I know. Good. Do you know anyone who says prerogative?
I do. But I say it quickly enough.
Fletcher.
I mean, but I say it quickly enough that all those R's are just mushing into each other anyway. It doesn't.
Yeah, that's why I don't. I just say prerogative and the hell with it. And
yeah, it's more like P apostrophe rogative, isn't it? Prerogative.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I like that.
That's actually good, Fletcher. And we did one a couple weeks ago with F-O-L-I-A-G-E.
Oh, foliage. Yeah, foliage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that.
That's really common.
I do wrong. Yeah. Foliage. Is it foliage, right? Foliage?
No.
Foliage.
It's foliage.
Okay, Kathy. Okay.
Goodbye. Yeah, and on that note, I got to run. It's late here in Spain.
You know, but I mean, there's asterisk and asterisk.
Yeah, yeah. Kathy did that. You do. Remember that time you did asterisk for like 10 minutes in New York?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
No.
You were trying to spell, you're really tired. You're trying to spell asterisk and you go, it's not coming up on the computer.
I'm so humiliated.
It's funny too, because you're great. I mean, I'm a terrible speller. Kathy
I'm
is
a good
really,
speller.
You're a very good speller.
Actually, Fletcher, one day we should have a spell off you and mine.
No.
See what happens.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
You'll defeat me. I have no doubt.
No, I don't know. I don't know. You frighten me.
You guys are both really good.
You scare me, Fletcher. You give me a pit in my stomach.
Oh.
This is another one that Tom from Indiana wrote about in his trifecta. He said, "We used to get a feeling in the pit of the stomach. Now we get a pit in the stomach."
Hmm.
What's a pit in the stomach?
I actually didn't realize this. I didn't know it used to be a feeling in the pit of the stomach. I've always only heard I have a pit in my stomach.
I think it's a case, like, I think it was a week ago, the last episode, we had Bringing in the Sheaves, and we were very vague on what sheaves were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happens with idioms is we know the meaning of the idiom.
Yep.
We don't really think about what the idiom means. Mm-hmm. And we had talked years ago about a bunch of idioms that were that have been changed in, because there is no pit in the stomach, or there is, I don't know. And we didn't have a pit.
I always imagined like I had eaten an entire apricot or something and,
yeah,
and I had a pit in there, and it feels, you know, it feels like there's a rock in my stomach, basically.
Yeah, but I don't really think of it, though. I just think of it, I just think of the whole idiom meaning, you know, I feel kind of upset about this or something.
It's interesting, though. I just typed it in just a plain old Google search, nothing fancy, and everything's coming up pit, and I have a pit in my stomach.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what people say now.
What does it mean to have a pit in your stomach? What is the pit of a stomach? Nothing is saying the feeling in the pit of your stomach.
No, I'm looking at it too, Kathy. Looking at Michigan Public Radio, which we should take as an authoritative source. So they're saying the same thing.
Yeah, that's the phrase. But that's the phrase now. That's why it has changed.
Yeah.
Oh, now there's also not in the pit of your stomach.
A not in the pit? Oh gosh.
It's like, okay, calm down.
That's a bridge too far.
Yeah. But,
you know, people say now, like, the proof is in the pudding, and that's not what the phrase used to be.
No, it isn't.
But honestly, aside from people who do know what the phrase used to be and like to hold on to things like that, what's the difference? You're saying the same thing either way.
Yeah.
I agree.
Then here we have the final word of Professor Ann Curzon had this to say. "I would guess that pit in my stomach is actually a logical reinterpretation where people are thinking about a hole or the hollow in the stomach like a pit of despair. And that's what this feeling is, this empty pit in your stomach."
Hmm.
She says.
Hmm.
Okay.
Seems pretty good.
Okay.
I feel a pit in my stomach. I'm thinking apricot now. I'm sorry. Fletcher, you got me
too.
With the apricot. And Ross, you want to do the final one from him? The last of the trifecta.
"I've heard this in the past few weeks, and I've heard several people say something like, the importance of this cannot be understated. Literally, that means whatever this is, its importance is impossible to understate. That means it's not important. I know when the speakers mean to say we should not understate its importance, but if they're using the word can, they should be saying its importance cannot be overstated, meaning that it is impossible to overstate or say too much about its importance." And then I like this last line. "And I cannot overstate how much this drives me nuts." Well, I agree. I mean, it has, it's that reminds me of, I couldn't
care
less.
"I
could care less." It's the same sort of thing.
Yes. I would not say it's the same sort of thing. In a literal sense, it's the same sort of thing. But as we've talked about before, "I could care less" has just become an idiomatic phrase. Whereas,
I don't know. And if we said before, I have no problem with it.
Yeah. I've learned to have no problem with it. Have you guys heard this? People saying understated when they mean overstated?
No, I haven't. It's really interesting.
I haven't heard
me.
This either. This is new to me.
Yeah, I haven't either. But I mean, it is really kind of, I can see where it would drive people nuts to hear it.
Yeah.
But I think we need to listen carefully and see if we can find it. Let me just see.
Okay, he's saying the importance of this cannot be understated.
Yeah, let's Google that right now.
I'm doing it right now. It's usually, and they're saying it's obviously wrong. No, I'm finding a lot. I'm looking at it and trying to find it in forums and in news.
Well, here's one right here. It's on Team Culture. And they're saying here, the importance of this cannot be understated. In today's world, the importance of this cannot be understated. Recent research has indicated a strong and healthy team culture is far more than just a selling point. That's interesting. He's correct. I mean, it's really
water and its importance cannot be understated.
Well, that I think is really vital. If someone says that, I got a problem, you know. No.
I'm finding a lot. I'm actually surprised. And in print.
Oof.
And I think that's a very valid pet peeve. And I think it's
cannot be understated.
Manitoba has a thing on their budget. The importance of this cannot be understated. To move forward as a province and a country, we need to do something or other. Wow. This is everywhere, and I think this is a bad, bad pet peeve. I think we should not have this.
Yeah, I agree. I also think if we're doing this show in 50 years, we're going to probably have to treat this the way we are treating I Could Care Less. Because it does sound like this is becoming an idiomatic phrase. It is not, I don't believe it's there yet, because this is the first time I've heard of it. So I think it's absolutely okay to be bothered by this because the meaning very much gets muddied. But in 50 years, assuming this is still around, not the show, but rather the phrase.
Well, let's hope the show's around too.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well,
let's hope we are.
We know that the show will be around in 50 years.
Yes.
I think it will be that idiomatic phrase that can't be taken literally anymore.
I think what's happening is what we do with idioms. We see understated, we see importance, so we automatically know that what's going to follow is the person saying this is important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've got it in the Times. I'm the New Yorker.
Wow.
The Economist.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
I keep looking. There's hundreds of examples. And to be, I don't like I Could Care Less either, frankly. I'm going to stick with, I still don't like either. But I think in both cases, you just, like, it's like basically, it's like a jumble of words that becomes one word, which means it's real important.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, because I think that you don't really look at it as it cannot be understood. You're not really thinking we can't say much about it. We're saying, you're right, Ross. We're saying this is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll give you a pit in your stomach.
Actually, that's well said, Kath, because this one gives me a real pit in my stomach or a real feeling of a whatever it really does.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.